Carmen's West from Laguna Beach.
My name's Wes. I'm alcoholic. Yeah. What time is it going? 8:30. Thanks, Greg, for giving me this opportunity to get up here with you all. Welcome to everybody who took chips. It's a big deal. I so often see people, oh, I only got 5 days. I only got 12 days, I only got 2 months. I mean, that's huge. If you're in here and you got some time, please hold on to it. It is a big deal. It's much harder to get in here and get that first day, first couple of days, than it is to stay in here and tough it out, So I hope that, you're proud that you made it in here. I hope that you feel lucky that you made it in here. There's a lot of people out there. That and for all of you who like relapsed, I've relapsed. There's a lot of people out there who are like, fuck, I wish I could. By the way, my mom's here. So this will be interesting. She's gonna be staring at me the whole time. I just dropped the F-bomb. Sorry, Mom. I'm gonna make sure not to talk about the time I licked heroin off my bathroom floor.
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll leave that out for tonight. But yeah, I just thought I'd drop the bombs right now. After this, it's all uphill from here.
Yeah.
It's all uphill. Let me think some more other gross stories that my mom has no idea about. She's like, "You are always such a good boy." I was like, "Yeah,
Yeah.
I love you too, Mom. Thank you." I'm grateful my mom's in the program. How cool is that? Yeah, you're the mom. 50-something years, two or three, and I don't think either of us is sure. Make yourself at home there, moms. The cool thing is she never said anything about like when I was getting kicked out of El Toro High School for smoking weed in the bathroom. She was never like, I'm so she never said that. I didn't find out till years later. So for any of the ones Al-Anons or whatever, having similar problems, right? Although it's such a different world now because weed's legal, right? Back then it was like a much bigger deal. We didn't have all the hydro. It was like outdoor and all this. It was a total different world. Anyhow, back to what I was saying about, there's a lot of people out there loaded who wish they were in here, who are wishing they could get back to AA. That's what's so crazy. Because I, in my relapse, I had a buddy who I was in rehab with, and I was calling him. I was like, "Yeah, man, I gotta get back to meeting." So he kept calling me, "Yo, you ready tonight? Let's go." I'm like, "Oh man, no, I'm busy. I'm busy, really busy, nodding off on my couch or whatever it was." You know what I mean? And so, I just hope that you can be really grateful for just this opportunity. This, the first day, the third day, the 12th day, the second month, the fifth month, that's where all the great stories start, So you're at the beginning of the most incredible thing you can ever do for your life. Think about it. So it's not like, oh, I got 7 months. It's like, I got 7 months away from that hell that you don't ever have to go back to if you don't want to. And if you feel alone, look around you. I don't know how many is 100 and some crazy mofos in here who have a way out, who have a solution, who want to help you. And I know it's so hard to pick up the phone. Even I have, by the way, my name is Wes Gere. I have 17 years sober. 12/10/07 is my sobriety date. I have Rob Malucky, who's my first sponsor. I have another guy that I work with named Mitch, also to have a different experience, to keep working these steps. But yeah, this is the most magical stuff there is. And first time I got through the steps, I was like, man, everybody should do these 12 steps. Seriously, they're that amazing. Yes, we apply them to alcohol. Yes, we apply them to drugs. They apply them to overeating. They apply them to gambling. They apply them to everything because you can. But it's a design for living that gives us freedom, that helps us evolve, that helps us grow, that grow unendingly. And the difference is like, there's so many people that want to like read these self-help books, which I'm down with. I've read a lot of them. But you read the book and you're like, man, that was good. And you never go back to them. This is a design for living we apply every day. And that's what we do. So the same way you go to the gym all the time, same way you're putting money in crypto all the time, the same way whatever you're doing, you're growing your relationship, your business, whatever it is, you get unending gains that are compounded. And that's what we get in here. That's what we get in here. You know, and so when I hear people say, I got 30 years, I'm just fucking crazy as always been. It's like, I don't want what you got home. That's not why I'm here. I'm really opposed to this on, you know, this infinite self-deprecation. You know what I mean? We love to beat ourselves up. Now it's like there's a duality there, right? Like, yeah, I have to come in here, especially for the newcomers, and get really, 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 really real with myself in a way I've never done, and with another man or woman. And then they're gonna reflect back to me in the fifth step, right? Some stuff I didn't see, I didn't realize, right? That's important. That's important. But this thing isn't about being a piece of shit that's crazy your whole life, or just a person who's not on drugs and booze anymore. This is about accessing the truest version of yourself that is hidden behind this thing I used to call partying. That's what I thought I was doing. I was partying. But you know what I was? I was a scared, insecure kid that ran from my feelings. And I went to a rehab, and the guy had me do like a timeline on one side. I can't remember how he framed it, but like on one side, write everything like there was kind of a bummer that you experienced in your life, whatever it is, right? Your dog dies, your parents get divorced, all the things, right? And on the other side, also do a timeline of the progression of your drinking and using. And my God, it was like every time something happened that was a little difficult. It's like, now I tried weed. Now I'm on to whiskey. Now here's the cocaine. I was like, damn, how'd you know, dude? You know what I mean? So what does this shows me? You know, and I just went through this with a guy. Same thing. It's because I didn't want to feel. I didn't know how to feel. I didn't know how to, you know, tackle life. I didn't know how to show up for myself. I didn't know how to show up for anybody else. But I thought I was partying, you know? And there's another little thing I love to say, which is like, because I heard it, I haven't heard it as much anymore, which makes me happy. But I was hearing people say, you know, there's no chapter in the book called In the Feelings. It's like this whole thing we're dealing with is about we drink because we like the effect produced by alcohol. That's literally what it says. It helps me to not feel, it helps me to numb out, right? And in the chapter Into Action, you're dealing with your resentments. Is resentment a feeling? How do you feel with, is that a feeling? I'd say so. Anger, pissed off, hurt. Those are feelings, right? Fear, is that a feeling? I feel fearful. That sounds like a feeling to me. Okay. And if you remember in the big book, when you get to the fourth and fifth step, it's talking about let's get down to causes and conditions. Okay, so now we're saying the feeling is the cause and the condition of my drinking. So my problem is feelings. So I'm gonna go out on a limb here and say there kind of is a chapter about going into your feelings. You know what I mean? And you know, when I was struggling early on with like the temptation or the craving, my brain would say, man, I just want a Corona with my tacos. You know what I mean? I want a margarita, Cadillac margarita. Man, I just want, just tastes so good out in the sun. You know what I mean? But my friend who is allergic to avocados and like basically dies if he eats an avocado doesn't go, man, I just want an avocado. He's like, fuck. Where's the EpiPen or whatever the shit is, you know? Why would I crave something that has beat me up so bad, destroyed my life? I don't know. How was it out there with you guys when you were like, who are you hanging with when it was really bad? Like, dude, the people I hung out with, I mean, come on, man. Wait, matter of fact, my band, we wrote a song because we called the guy, he's like, yeah. We call him Serpent Boy. We call him Serpent Boy because he was always pinching your bag. You know what I mean? He's always stealing shit. He was the quintessential guy who wears my drugs. And he's like, oh man, I'm a human farm. And next thing you know, he's really high. And you're like, how'd you get high? You didn't have a shit. Oh, well, I don't know. Maybe it's under your pillow, bro. Oh, check under there. Ah, man. Serpent Boy. We wrote a song about it. Yes. Wasn't a bad song, actually. Anyhow, so I'm all over the place. I like to be. I don't want to do some canned pitch. I'll tell you my story. A lot of it's going to be the same I say every time because it's my story, but I like to just kind of flow and go where it feels right. Hi, Mom. How are we doing, Aaron? I told her to count how many F-bombs, quarter for each one. I think I'm up to 275 now. Anyhow, okay, so I think I have the typical story in the sense that a super insecure kid, we hear about this all the time. I don't know that that's why I'm an alcoholic. I do know that there's been some alcoholism in the family, you know, in the genes, gets passed down. That's a strong connection for sure. I think there's a lot of people who could be alcoholics who never drink far enough to become one. You know what I mean? Like you could kind of tell. I ended up playing in a band where every night I got to drink so I could kind of like water that garden really well. It grew some large fruits of death and destruction. But anyhow, so I just remember, we moved around. Parents doing their best to give us a better life. And I just remember every new school was just friggin' terrifying. And that's just how it was for me. It's funny because I was talking to my therapist and I was like, man, I didn't know that you could just be nice to people and make friends. She's like, how about you don't have to do anything to make friends? I was like, oh, damn. Because my whole life, I thought you had to do something. I thought you had to get their approval. I thought you had to be cool. I thought you had to be extra. And I learned through some outside issues, meaning deeper therapies, that this was my coping mechanism because I didn't feel good enough. Dad wasn't around, so subconsciously there's this thing that's like, where's dad? You know what I mean? And trying to equate my, again, it's subconscious. I'm not aware of that, but trying to equate my worth by what's going on outside of me. And I'm a new guy in a school and I'm like, I'm scared, but I don't know that I'm scared because when you're five, you're not walking around going, gosh, I feel so insecure today. You know what I mean? I'm not aware of this. I'm just feeling it. And like in the third step, it talks about we step on the toes of others and they retaliate. And so I was always trying to act extra, lie, I'm good at this, put people down, be a smart ass, try to be funny. And like I was annoying people that like me, you know, because I was just trying too hard to be liked. And I remember it being crushing. That I'm like trying to be funny at a party, and people are like, this guy's fucking annoying, I'm gonna punk him, right? And I would be heartbroken, like, oh, this man's gonna love me. You know, that's how I felt, you know, but I didn't know how to fit in. And so for me, like, this is the fertile ground that we have some version of that other people don't have that gives me that thing that happens that when I took that first hit of weed, I'm like, oh, yeah, that relief. I get an incredible amount of relief. I loved it. I loved being gone. But I really didn't know it. There was a part of me where it felt bad because, you know, I think the first time I smoked weed, I didn't really get high. I think you hear about that. The next time, and I'm probably 14 or 15, I felt like I was on like purple microdot or something. I just remember going into 7-Eleven, just like everything was orange. I'm like this, and I was just out of my head. And I loved it. I loved it. And you know, a lot of people are like, I took a Vicodin and I didn't like how I felt. That is not my story. That is not my story. I remember going to get my wisdom teeth pulled and I had four of them. And you hear the stories. They're gonna ask you how much you drink and whatever. So I was like, man, I drink a lot. Give me the juice, right? And they told me to bring some music. So I had Stevie Ray Vaughan on in the headphones. And I just remember the guys. I swear I could be hallucinating this, but I swear the guy's knee was on my chest while he's like trying to extract my tooth. And I remember a chunk of a tooth flying out and blood everywhere because he couldn't get it out. He's like, "How you doing, man?" I'm like, "Yeah, woo, I'm doing good." You know, I was feeling nothing. I mean, that was not lost on me. But there's this ability to completely check out of anything, even a four wisdom teeth extraction. This is pretty powerful. Anyhow, so yeah, we moved around a lot and then went back east when my folks divorced, and then we came back to California, and it was cool. Like childhood wise, it was cool for 5 years to grow up where the end of our street was just a forest and cut down trees and make forts and all that. That was amazing. But then we came back to California, very happy about that. I'm a California kid, and it was like, going to fourth grade in Found Valley. And I was still wearing these like super obnoxious plaid pants, like the Brady Bunch. I don't know if y'all seen that, like some serious 70s stuff. So the kids were like clowning me and making fun of me. It was very uncomfortable. And then, for a guy like me, nowadays, by the way, I got up here, I got steak sauce all over my shirt today. And I was like, you know what? AA is rad because I don't care. In the old days, I would have been like, oh my God, stain my shirt. I got to go talk. They're going to judge me. You know what I mean? I don't care. I get freedom. But back then, with the Bobby Brady pants, terrifying, making fun of me, made fun of by the kids, going to the new school, ended up in El Toro High School. And the way I connected to people was like, because I'm terrified, is like if you had like an Iron Man shirt on or Sex Pistols and ripped jeans, like, hey, you want to smoke some pot? That's how I connected. That was my in. And then that turned into, the backyard parties, right? I was terrified. My friends are shaving and they're all big and buff. I haven't hit puberty yet. I'm like, hey guys, but if I drank some beer, I felt, tough and mighty. I could talk to girls, all the stuff we talk about. But the relief that I was getting, I started seeking it all the time. I had to have it, but I didn't know that. I don't know if mom knows this part, but when I was at El Toro High School, I had this little teeny pipe, on the keychain, and I would wake up and smoke a little bit of weed. Then they would let us come home. On mom and I gonna have a therapy session after this. After I drop all this, like, what? El Toro High School, they would let us leave at lunch. And then so I'd go home to smoke my little teeny pipe, but then my stepbrother, who could handle things much more than I was, like, no, don't be a baby. That was not the word he used. Mom's here. And he'd give me like a 4 foot bong rip and put some weird white powdery substance. And then I'd go to drafting class of 15 year olds going, what was that white stuff? This is what I did. But see, this is where I'm kind of, and you hear all variations of these stories. Some people come in really timid and then late and then it kicks up a notch. I was just always like, I mean, there was time he's like, eat these. And I was like, what is it? Just shut up and eat them. And I went to like science class frying on mushrooms, 15 years old. And let me tell you, when they turn the lights on and off and the frogs are having sex, it makes you laugh out loud uncontrollably. And so now everybody else is like, ew, gross. Why is the praying mantis eating that bug? And I'm like, ah, laughing by myself at 15 in the science class. I mean, who does this? It's not normal behavior. But back then, because at 15, I felt like I was a man, I'm just doing whatever I want. Who cares, right? But now when I think of kids doing that, like taking 4 foot bong Cocoa Puffs and going to drafting class after lunch. Anyhow, so this is just how it went for me. And the whole time I was playing guitar, and I dreamt of being a musician. It was just I grew up in a musical family. Mom's dad, my grandfather, was a very talented musical director, and he played the carillon, which is the bell tower. He's like kind of famous in that niche that he had. And so I had classical music around me all the time. That was kind of the norm. Very beautiful, singing in church and all that stuff. I cannot sing, by the way. But then I heard like Smoke on the Water, now, now, and I was like, ooh, what's that? And I wanted to know how to make those sounds, those sinister guitar sounds, Dead Kennedys and even the old B-52s. It was like cool. I loved all that stuff. And so that was what I was trying to do. But anyhow, at El Toro High School, they had what we called the narcs. There was these ladies that walked around to kind of police the area. And everybody met in the student parking lot, and we would all smoke cigarettes, and you're not supposed to, but if they came up, I'd like put in my back pocket, what's up? Oh no, just hanging out, talking. Everybody smoked weed, a lot of drug deals going down El Toro. And then during the breaks, like between second period or whatever, all the guys, I don't know what's going on in the women's bathroom, but all the men the children would pile in the mid-puberty children would pile into the boys' room, right? And smoke cigarettes. So I thought, clearly this is a great opportunity to smoke some weed. Nobody will know. Somebody narked on me. Because the women narks, they couldn't come into the men's room. Thought we had free rein. I thought it was a great idea. It made so much sense at the time. And apparently the faculty didn't think so. And they came in and busted me. And I knew, because I already knew that that's like expulsion. I don't know what they do now, but anyhow. So I got kicked out of there. And in an effort to stay in a normal school, I went to live with my dad, the doctor. His mom had remarried. My stepfather, great guy. He was at one point head of narcotics at Fountain Valley Police Department. Oh, the irony. And so I got kicked out of El Toro High School and I went to move in with my dad. And there was a, my friend said, when he tells his story, like when something bad would happen, did he ever think of stopping or changing? No. I got kicked out of El Toro. Did I think about, like, oh, maybe this weed thing's a little too far. Maybe I shouldn't smoke it at school. Like, none of that happened. I was just like, oh, cool. I'll live with my dad and I'll probably be able to get away with it a lot easier, you know? And he was super enabling, he just was. And anyhow, I get kicked out of Esperanza. I got kicked out of that school for ditching. And then I was ditching my continuation school, El Camino Real, until finally they locked me in. So every teacher would call, and I finally graduated. I turned 18 and felt like dad can't tell me to come home on a curfew anymore. And I had a best friend who had a pickup truck at the time who had a huge cocaine problem. I did not like cocaine, but I really had to be his wingman and help him do it many nights a week. Matter of fact, that guy was the first guy to turn me on to AA because we would dip into this like AA meeting and we would drink beforehand with Bob. His name is Bob. We'd be drinking. He goes, you guys, come on, I gotta go to a meeting. Like, okay. We'd walk in drunk, not knowing. And he'd sit there for a second. I'd be like, this is a trip. We're talking about the big book. I'm like, are they talking about the Bible? I don't even know. And then we would go and he'd go right to the cocaine dealer's house. So I don't know what Bob was trying to do. It didn't take. He's doing fine now. He's clearly not one of us. But anyhow, I wasn't coming home at night. And then my dad finally kicked me out and he goes, son, I don't know. I flunked out of high school. I mean, sorry, I flunked out of college, Fullerton Junior College. I barely went to any classes. And then they started talking about, like, they would say, hey, open up your, turn in your assignment. Let's do that. Like, what assignments do? Yeah, it's true. You didn't know. No, I didn't know. How would I know that? It's in your syllabus. What's a syllabus? I didn't know. I didn't understand these simple college terms. Like, you have to, like, when you're in high school, they're like, don't forget on Tuesday, have your homework. Everybody in college is like, you just got to handle your shit. No, that's not for me. So I flunked out, and dad kicked me out because he said, I don't know if I'm going to get the call that you're dead someday, basically. And I lived in my car. My little Mazda B2000 truck for a while, and I did the couch tour. And of course, I'm probably not reporting any of this to my mom. I'm probably just like, yeah, doing great over here, doing great. I got fired from Domino's Pizza, Carl's Jr., McDonald's, the other McDonald's. There's probably another one in there I'm forgetting. This is my life. I'm sleeping in my pickup truck and getting fired everywhere. This is how I crush it, ladies and gentlemen. Barely graduating high school. So anybody who has parents out there, the story actually ends pretty good. So if your kids are running amok like me, it doesn't always end bad. That's what I'd like to say. Have faith. I personally found high school to be super boring. Like, let's teach you how to do this math problem. Now go do it 100 times. Why? I don't understand. What is the point? Anyhow, so I'm really crushing it, getting fired from fast food jobs. And I think mom knew something wasn't going so well. So she worked at an insurance company. I put on a tie, got a job there. And then I started doing pretty good for a while. I quit the weed, I quit smoking cigarettes, and now I'm just beer drinking and tequila on the weekends. And the big book talks about this stuff, right? It talks about we have these periods where we straighten out. And we're like, okay, see, not so bad, not so bad. And I'm continuing to try to chase this band of this dream to be in a band. And I held that job for a long time. I did pretty well. I moved up from data entry to, like, be a supervisor of the data entry team. It's funny because we moved to a new building and I got to lay out the floor plan for me. Now, my mom is like the head of the division. We don't really integrate too much, but definitely, technically, I'm under her, There's like 200 people in this company. Anyhow, so we got to lay out the cubicles for the for how they're gonna be for my department, right? And so there was a wall right there, and I'm like, all the cubicles were kind of angled, right? They weren't squared up to the wall. So I put mine against the wall, so my computer's there. So I would just, because I would, at this point, I'm trying to do a band and we're rehearsing all night and promoting at clubs and all that. So I'm literally sleeping an hour or two a night, but I used to put my arm like this on the thing and hold a pen like this and stare at my kid, and I'd be like sleeping. And if somebody came up, they'd be like, hey, Wes, oh, hold on a second. Yeah, what's up? So sorry for stealing salary from the company, Mom. It's just I had to do it. I couldn't hang. This is what I was doing. But that was back in the day where you could leave at lunch, and my direct supervisor would be like, let's go to Claim Jumper, and they had all their cocktails by number, and we go, let's just pick numbers. I'll have a 72. Ooh, gross, 72, yuck. And I'll have a 49. Oh, But that's what we did. We drank at lunch. Sorry, Mom. Another thing you probably didn't know. This is almost like a, it's almost like they call it when we have a con joint when your parent comes in. Anyhow, the point is, I was there for about 8 years, and I was moving my desk one day, and I found this stack of all my old bands and flyers, and I was like, oh man, I've been in so many shitty bands, probably mid-20s. You should probably give up on this, homie. It's over for you. Data entry is gonna be your life, and just pack it in. And then right after that, I went to some show and saw this guy, 8:30, right? Okay, great. Plenty of time. Plenty of time. I went and saw some singer that I thought was really amazing. And we decided to form a new band. And keep in mind, this is my dream. It's my way out. It's my ticket. It's what I hope, otherwise, because I have no skills, no college, no nothing. And so we were gonna rehearse on a Sunday and like an afternoon rehearsal, and I went day drinking in Huntington, and as usual, just was shit face wasted and went home to try to, stumble to rehearsal. And I walk in and there's a guy there who was my roommate, which means he was sleeping on my couch and clearly in my bed sometimes because he gave me scabies, and that was gross. And we're always like, why is that guy itching all the time? Why does he have scabs all the time? Brian from Chicago, look out. And then my girlfriend at the time, which is basically just the girl who we took over the house from her and she wouldn't move out. But they were snorting something, and I already told you how it is. I'm like, what is it? And tell me later. I'll do that. I said, what are you guys doing? And they told me it was heroin, and I hadn't tried it at this time. And I was like, I want to try some of that. And so I did. And I was too drunk. I was at least smart enough to know I shouldn't drive myself or couldn't drive myself to rehearsal. And we're driving on the way to rehearsal. And keep in mind, this is the beginning days of this band, and it was horrible. We were still writing just horrible songs, lost. We didn't know what we were doing, like, didn't have our direction yet. And then so now I snort this mystical substance, and I'm in the car with my acoustic, dude's driving me, and I like crank out the song. I was like, man, that's a pretty cool song. And I crank out another song. I write two songs on the way to rehearsal. I was like, man, we thought that heroin was supposed to make you mellow. He's like, you idiot, that was meth. I was like, oh, wait a second. So you can be totally shit-faced drunk and you snort this stuff and you'll be wide awake writing great rock songs? I am in. And I was a weekend warrior with that stuff. I mean, it was like Friday nights, and I couldn't wait to get to my friend's house. I hung out with this artist girl. We were making movies, and not that kind of movie, but and drawing and painting, and for a while it was working. And again, you know, what I learned or was taught here when I got here is we got to look at the similarities, not the differences. Maybe you never did the stuff, you know, drugs I did or whatever, but there's a period where we're doing what we're doing because it's working, right? Maybe you're a college kid snorting Adderall because you got to get through it or whatever. You're a mom that has 12 kids and so you have to have your 3 bottles of wine. You know, there's a million versions of the story, but for me, I had a bunch of shitty bands and now I'm on this magical white powdery substance that makes a lot of people lose their teeth, frankly. And my band starts doing really well. You know, we were getting put in magazine ads, you know, by cool companies. Like we went from no, you know, when you're trying to get back in the day, we had a thing called record deals. I know you guys probably don't understand that, but it was a long time ago. But you know, you're trying to get people to take notice of your music and all that, and most of the time they don't care because all these bands suck. But it went the other way, right? Where they're like, "Here, can we give you clothes? Here, we want to put you in an ad here," and it was amazing. Meanwhile, I'm 123 pounds, 6'1", you know, and I remember my we got a manager. My manager came to the show. We actually played it with this band we called Head PE, by the way. And we were playing up on the top of Big Bear, some border cross festival with Incubus and all these people that we used to play with. And my manager comes in and goes, "Jesus Christ, Wes, next stop Auschwitz or what?" Because he's just this obnoxious Philadelphia guy. Rest in peace, Big Ray. But that's how sucked up I was, you know? And so the reason I tell this part is not to frighten my mother to, you know, give her nightmares tonight, but because there's a lot of times where we have what feels like success over here and we're half dead over here. You know what I mean? There's a bunch of, if you think, like, if you're in here and you think that the money, the car, the job, the chick, the Ferrari is going to cure your alcoholism, I hate to tell you, it's not. I know rock star friends. I was friends with Chester Bennington, who's dead, and I know a lot of them who didn't make it, Paul from Slipknot, and these people who don't make it, you know? And I remember getting into one of those friendly conversations with a kid online and him saying, you know, how talking, I think he was talking about Chester at the time, "How could you do this to yourself when you have everything? You have kids that love you and a wife and you're famous and you got the money." It's like, because when you have that and you're fucking miserable, you're really fucked. You know what I mean? You come in here, you got nothing, no car, maybe, you know what I mean? No job, no nothing. Everything is a massive win. I got my license back. I paid off that lien. I got an apartment. I got a job. I got checks that I can keep the money. Like, it's all a massive win. And what we know is that when we're doing drugs and all this stuff, we're looking outside of ourselves to fix what's wrong on the inside of ourselves. So, money, women, houses feels good for a second, but it doesn't cure alcoholism. It just doesn't, and it just won't. It's just a false one, you know. Bob Marley says, if you're chasing money, money is a number, and numbers go on forever. You'll never be satisfied, you know. But it does help to have a few more numbers in your dissatisfaction, I will say. Where was I? Okay, so I toured around the world for like a decade, and you know, I got off a lot of the hard stuff. And just turned into, that's when I started drinking like a fish. And to my friends that introduced themselves or identify as addicts, I did too. I came in and, you know, I thought I was an alcoholic and an addict, you know, and then some old timer was like, "She identifies as alcoholic. You don't think she did cocaine? This guy identifies as alcoholic. You don't think he was a junkie? He was." And so I identify as an alcoholic. And I think it's kind of interesting too that we, have this differentiation between drugs and alcohol. It's all the same shit. Alcohol is a drug that's just you drink it. I don't know what the difference is. It's just you put it in, you get loaded. Same thing, pill, loaded, whatever. Drink morphine. You know? It's all the same to me. My problem is, and I like to go into this a little bit, my problem is that when I'm not loaded, I'm restless, irritable, discontent. I don't believe it's called boredom. I believe it's called being discontent. So no matter how bad I get beat up by the drugs, the booze, the using, the binges, the life, the You know what I mean? The remorse, the incomprehensible demoralization. No matter how bad that gets, my brain will talk me into picking up again and say some form, it'll be different this time. Like when I quit methamphetamine, but then I lost my band, and Serpent Boy said, "Yeah, the reason you had a problem before is you didn't do this," and shook a bag of heroin. I was like, "Dude, you're so right. If I just do heroin with my meth, I'll be okay." It talks about in the big book, right? It's the guy with the whiskey and the milk, right? He's trying not to get loaded, and he's just like, "Well, I'll just put a little whiskey in my milk." Like, hello, dude, does that sound good to you? But to him, he's like, "Yeah, this is gonna be great. Whiskey in my milk, a little bit. Hey, I didn't die. Let me have a little more whiskey in the milk. That's me." The difference is it was meth and heroin. You know what I mean? Thinking it's gonna be different this time. I'm restless, irritable, discontent. Unless I get loaded, I need the ease and comfort that comes at once, right from that first drink, whatever it is. I have an allergy of the body that will never go away. I will never be able to drink or use anything safely, no matter what, ever. That is the first step. To the core of my being, I know that. Even though in my alcoholism, I wasn't waking up drinking Coors Light or shaking like I needed whiskey like the typical alcoholic. But it started with alcohol. I couldn't stay stopped. And once I start, I'm on a bender and I don't know what's going to happen. And I don't know when it's going to stop. You know, that's what I know for me. And so, yeah, you know, the band imploded and crashed and burned, and I ended up in a treatment center. And the only reason I picked this treatment center is because they said I could just do 30 days. And they said, you know, just keep an open mind. But luckily, it was a 12-step treatment center. I really didn't know about the 12 steps or whatever. What had happened was that I moved in with my brother to try to get away from all the tweakers and the junkies. And I was just trying to drink a little bit and smoke a little weed, and it kind of worked. But then I would go off on these runs. So he intervened on me, ended up in the treatment center. And then when I got into the big book, I got into the doctor's opinion, like I just talked about, and explained why when I have that one Coors Light, it turns to Jägermeister, it turns to cocaine, it turns to all these things. So luckily I had a solution and I bought in and I started doing the 12 steps. And you know, my brain said, I'll never do music again. You can't be a sober guy and do music, you know? And the reason I want to share that is for all of you who are wondering, especially the new people, what your life can be sober. It can be the best thing ever. It will have the most chance to be your best life than in any other circumstance, because you're going to unlock your greatest potential. That's what's going to happen. And so I got really into prayer and meditation. I was going to this 11-step meeting because now I'm working a day job. And in there, it said we developed this vital sixth sense. At this time, I have a desk job answering phones. I fucking hate it. I feel like I've lost my soul, but it's the best job. And I wanted to say, I want to tell my brother, F you, I'm out of here. But to what? So I just kept going into my spirit ground and meditating, going, where do you want me, God? I know I'm not supposed to be here. There's got to be something. Show me the way. I meditated, meditated, meditated. And then I started, it's like, it's all these weird serendipities started happening. I was like, I feel like my brother's going to fire me. He fired me. I was like, I feel like somebody who needs me to help them stay sober and travel the world, because I've traveled the world, is going to call me. Somebody called me for exactly that. I'm in Hong Kong. Come help me stay sober. I was like, I need $10,000 to start this business to help people with music. Boom. Hey, we got a check for friggin' T-Pain's song went into our bucket. We got some money we shouldn't have got legally, mind you. All these things started happening because I just kept going and doing what AA says to do, develop this vital sixth sense. I wanted the magic of the universe unlocked. That is what I'm so happy about. And I decided to start meditating on getting back into music. And I'm doing this Wayne Dyer meditation for manifestation. You sit there, you imagine what you want, no matter what it is, peace, serenity, health. It's going through your root chakra, up out your third eye. I'd meditate, meditate, meditate. I did that. And about 10 days in, I got the call from the band Korn to come play guitar with them. Why? Because they wanted a sober guitar player. Okay, let's review. My brain said I can never do music again because now I'm sober. It's not going to work. The universe is like, hey, stupid, you're sober now. Of course you can do music. Music is a gift from God that we all enjoy. Of course you can do it. And I got to tour around the world totally sober. Was it hard to tour totally sober? No. Because in the 10th step, it says by now that The problem has been removed for us. That is the great fact, right? I'm not cocky nor I'm afraid. I went to meetings all around the world. My third year meeting, I was in Perth, Australia, opening up for Guns N' Roses, scuba diving under a sea cave with rays of light shooting in on my knees, going, "Oh my freaking God, sobriety is so fucking cool." And it's all because of you and doing this stuff in my life every day, right? Somebody gave me early on kind of like a menu of what you can do every day. First of all, if you're doing the AA, here's where I shame you a little bit, just kidding. But if you're doing the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, it says upon awakening, that's part of the step. It doesn't say when you're driving your car, it doesn't say in your shower, it doesn't say sometime later, it says upon awakening, consider our thoughts for the day. I get on my knees every day and I pray to what I call God. I don't know what God is. I can't explain what created the friggin' universe and the planets and all that. I don't care who says they know. They don't. It's beyond our human comprehension, but I know it works when I go, help me, God, stay sober. Help me get out of myself. And I'm not into rehearsing prayers or memorizing them out of the big book because then they'll have no meaning, right? I won't feel it. I'll just be like, blah, 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 blah. Okay, I'm done. I'll just be checking a box. Every day, I just say whatever prayer that's kind of in line with the third step. Help me, show me. This is what I'm struggling with. Oh my God, I got this thing to handle. Can you help me with this thing? You know what I mean? I get into that and I ask God to guide me and I meditate. There is magic on the other side. This is all an illusion. Here's when we go hippie woo-woo west. It's all an illusion. Quantum physics will tell you that everything is energy and frequency. My problem is my thinking that tries to predict the future based on only the knowledge it has. So we'll never say, you're going to meet your homie from 7 years ago next Tuesday, and he's going to give you the perfect offer. Your brain's never going to predict that. So why do I want to rely on this? But I can get quiet, let it settle down, and try to tune into the divine creative force that has created this entire universe. And in that place, I can create amazing things. So when the corn gig was going away, I got really, really depressed and into self-pity. Because when I got the corn gig, I cried like a baby in a Starbucks in like North Kakalaki. Because for me, it was like, oh my God, by all my hard work of being a rock star, I finally made it. And it was because I got sober. But when that gig was going away and I have no skills, I was in self-pity and I wanted to go like this. And by the way, I will cuss at my God. It doesn't matter if I say it or not. He knows if I'm thinking it, so I might as well say it. I'm fucking pissed. Help me! I've had those prayers, trust me. And so I came to this realization. I don't believe I'm here to suffer. I do not believe that anybody is here to suffer. Yes, tragedy happens, but I don't believe that's it. So if I knew I'm supposed to be sober and I was drawn to be a musician in my heart, in my soul, right? Then it was like, okay, God, show me how I can help people and make a living. That is a prayer that Alcoholics Anonymous taught me. Because it was always like, hey, buy my black t-shirt and buy my CD. I was not praying for you. And so the idea came to me to bring music into treatment centers, and I created a program called Rock to Recovery. Took me a long time of pitching it for 8 months till we got to go. I found the organization on 12, 12, 12. We're now 13 years deep. I have a team of about 20. And we do 600 sessions every month, and we've written 40,000 songs. We work with addicts, mental health. We have a 9-year contract with the Department of Defense. I get to go help wounded warriors who've seen their friends blown to smithereens. I get to write songs with them. And you know what they said? I was going to kill myself after this event, but Rock to Recovery put a song in my heart. That's what I get to do today. Because of Alcoholics Anonymous. Isn't that incredible? And so it's not I'm incredible, it's the gift of this lifestyle that I was taught that they created in 1930 something. So if there's one message you get from here, I hope that you know that you're good enough, you're perfect, you're loved, you're right where you should be. There's nothing you can't accomplish as long as you put growing and being a service, your top priority every day. Thank you for letting me share. Yes.